All right, our second featured reader of the night is Sarah Beth Childers. Her inspirations, A Good Swim, Her Spoiled Cat, Big T Collection.
All right, this is the first half of an essay called The Preacher. A middle-aged man whistles at his own reflection as he buttons his cuffs, ties his necktie, and slips on a plaid wool jacket. The kid's off to school, the paper read. It's time for his morning visitation. His wife, her blue eyes unreadable, appears behind him in the mirror. "Can't I come with you?" she says, her hand on his shoulder. "I'd like to get out more, talk to our people. Really, I might do a better job than you, persuading some of those reluctant old ladies to come to church. I know I'd feel better talking to a woman." He looks her reflection in the eye for a second, eyebrows raised. Then he stoops to tie his shoes. His wife's hand droops to her side. "Dear, you know it's important for me to make these calls alone for a while, to establish rapport with our new congregation. And you don't need the extra stress." A quick kiss goodbye, and he pulls out of the parsonage lot in his freshly washed car, checking his comb over for gaps in the rear view. The preacher who married my parents was having an affair. Several years before my parents' wedding, the preacher visited my mother's church, a two-centuries-old Methodist house of worship with a large fellowship hall in the basement and a small ornate sanctuary. Carved wooden angels peered down from the corners of the sanctuary ceiling at the worshipers in their velvet cushioned pews. During his visit, the preacher's wife, Sarah, stood up in front of those pews and testified about a spiritual vision she'd witnessed a few months before. On a cold, clear night, an angel appeared to her during her evening prayers. He chided her for not forgiving several women in the church who had hurt her. Sarah didn't tell the congregation that the woman had hurt her by sleeping with her husband. To achieve this forgiveness, the angel instructed Sarah to rise early the next morning and sing the chorus of the hymn, "Oh, How I Love Jesus," once for each woman, replacing Jesus' name with theirs. When she finished, she needed to take the church directory and sing the same song for each of the church members. Confused and indignant as Mary and Sarah, biblical women who had also received messages from angels, this Sarah protested. Singing so many names would take hours, and she didn't have hours. She had church work to do, and she had to take the children to school first thing in the morning. The angel told her she was wrong. A snowstorm would strike the area that night. No one would be able to go anywhere. Sarah woke the next morning to 2 feet of snow, just as the angel had predicted. So she opened the church registry and sang her love for her husband's congregation. The congregation at my mother's church sat awestruck. These were quiet Methodists in southern West Virginia, organizers of covered dish dinners, readers of romances and westerns, collectors of coats to warm impoverished children. They were unaccustomed to supernatural interventions. 1 year later, the church received an exhilarating letter from the district superintendent informing them that the visiting preacher had been selected to serve as the next pastor of their church. On his first Sunday, the preacher stood at the pulpit in his long black robe and delivered a sweet sermon about kindness to neighbors and the sin of using styrofoam cups. The audience sat enraptured, the old men fully awake, the teenage boys forgetting to calculate the number of hymns, prayers, and recitations that divided them from food and fresh air. Anything seemed possible. If this preacher's wife spoke with angels, heard prophecies that came true, who knew what wonders the man himself had seen? My mom, then 21, sat in the congregation, burning to serve the Lord in her unfashionably long skirts, a heavy wooden cross tied on a chain around her neck. Tired and overworked, craving divine support, she listened happily to the new preacher's words. "Looking back," she says, "we felt like God himself had come among us." The preacher who married my parents was having an affair. Every weekday morning, my great-grandmother, Mom Wilson, watched his carrying on through her front window as she drank a cup of coffee, The Price is Right, droning on the television. He parked his old car in the empty space by the church on the corner, then he strode down the cracked sidewalk, Bible in hand, up to a little blue house. He rang the doorbell, and a woman opened the door immediately. She'd been waiting, it seemed. After a quick look around, the preacher and his Bible disappeared inside. Early one morning, hours before the preacher walked past her house, Mom saw something far more spectacular, an angel, like what Sarah saw, though maybe this angel was different. He appeared for a moment as she climbed from the bathtub, a tall, muscular man, silent and luminous against her bathroom door. Wrapped in a towel, she grabbed a piece of blue chalk from a drawer in the kitchen, racing back to sketch the angel's outline in the dark brown wood before it faded from her memory. I saw that chalk drawing on Mom Wilson's bathroom door when I visited her as a child, listening to her affectionate chatter, sucking on her stale butterscotch candies. By that time, she had filled her house and yard with angels to remind her of her own divine vision. Brass-winged creatures sunk into the shag carpet, painted statues cluttered the flower beds, and ceramic cherubs perched above the fireplace with its simulated fire. Mom Wilson retraced her chalk angel every time it faded for 40 years. I picture my great-grandmother, 90 years old, her smile bright and her skin crumpled like white paper. She looks uncharacteristically serious as she stands on a step stool in the bathroom with her piece of blue chalk. Her curly gray wig slips slightly in its bobby pins as she stretches up, darkening the outline of her messenger from God. A photograph from my parents' wedding album. The preacher and Sarah sit side by side in my dad's family's living room and kitchen chairs, and my grandpa, my dad's father, dragged in to accommodate the guests. Shiny rabbit ears on a TV stick up behind the preacher's head. It's the night of my parents' rehearsal dinner, less than 24 hours before their wedding. The preacher's shoulders are straight, his lips are pursed, as if he's whistling, ready to plant a kiss or speak. Sarah's lips are closed tight. Her hair is short and plain, defying or ignoring the high tea style worn then by women her age. Except for her rose lipstick, her face looks pasty, her pallor thrown into relief by her husband's pink skin and the shine of his high forehead. She looks tired of sitting in the front row as her husband preaches weddings, eating rehearsal dinners in unfamiliar houses in the same old restaurants, listening to family say the same happy, hopeful things about the young married couple-to-be. Sarah's hands are folded in her lap, her wedding rings visible. She's had them for over 20 years. Except for their faces, his confident, hers weary, they look like a match set. Her turquoise pantsuit picks up a line of blue in his brown plaid jacket. Neither of them looks at the camera, but off in the same direction. Maybe my nervous parents are repeating the story of their first date, the winter hayride, the cool air on my dad's swollen, infected earlobes. Or maybe my papa, my mom's father, is boasting about what a bargain he found on the wedding dress and cake. The preacher's eyes look like his mind is drifting, maybe to the service tomorrow, or to a woman's bare, freckled skin on his visitation circuit. Sarah's head leans on the preacher's shoulder, a support after a long day. He's her husband, after all. The preacher who married my parents was having an affair. Multiple affairs, most likely, and by my parents' wedding, the congregation had started to figure it out. Old men in suits whispered over cigarettes in the parking lot after church, wondering what they should do. My mom, however, hadn't heard the rumors. She still believed in the preacher. Already devoting herself to church activities, teaching Sunday school, throwing wedding and baby showers, calling community members, and offering to pray the sinner's prayer with them over the phone, my mom wanted to do more. For over a year, she'd asked the preacher to let her go out on visitation, to sit on strangers' worn couches, to tell them about Jesus and her Methodist church. He refused her every time, saying she would need training to connect spiritually with those needy backsliders, and he was too busy to train her. Finally, my mom's persistence won the preacher over. He gave her a workbook to complete, and she went. She visited the forgotten names in the church directory. An elderly man with a plywood wheelchair ramp tacked over his concrete front steps. A young woman who washed her baby's cloth diapers in the bathtub to save money, unable to afford disposables or make enough trips to the laundromat. Soon my mom came to the name of the woman who lived down the street from Mom Wilson. She mentioned to the preacher that she intended to visit that woman, a church member who only came to church on holidays, sitting quietly in the last pew by herself. Surely she could be convinced to get more involved with her church family. His voice low and solemn, the preacher told my mother to keep away. "She's a troubled woman," he said. "It's best if you leave her to me." My mother never visited Mom Wilson's neighbor, but soon after she'd married my dad, she called on another woman who'd stopped coming to church. Luella, an elderly member of the congregation just as clueless and well-meaning as my mom, went with her. Laughing, gossiping, remembering answered prayers, they drove up to a brown one-story and rang the doorbell. A woman came to the door, middle-aged but with a stylish haircut. "As long as you women aren't selling anything, I reckon I can spare you a minute," she said. She opened the front door wide, and my mom and Luella went in and took a seat on the sofa. A horde of young children played noisily in the back room, occasionally poking a shy face into the living room. My mom took the lead. "I noticed in the church registry that you visited us a few months ago. I wish you'd come back and see us. We could sure use you and your children." My mom pictured the woman singing hymns in front of a red velvet pew, the children in white wooden chairs in the Sunday school class she taught, building pretty crosses out of popsicle sticks. "And I'm sure you'd love our reverend sermons," Luella piped up. "I've heard every one since he came here, and he hasn't preached a bad one yet." As Luella spoke, the woman's face flashed with recognition, and she narrowed her eyes at the smiling faces across from her. "What church are you ladies representing?" she asked. She grunted when my mom told her. "I thought I'd seen you all before. You want me to come back to church, do you?" the woman said, making sure the children were out of earshot. She stood to show her guests the door. "Your reverend invited me to church one Sunday, and on Monday morning he was right there where you ladies are sitting, trying to sweet-talk me into bed with him." I imagine my mom's face as she drove back across town, the preacher's shining image cracking to pieces on the asphalt. the chrome bumpers, the stop signs. She ran tense fingers through her long brown curls, trying to make it home before she cried. Less than a month before, she'd stood before the preacher at the front of the church, murmuring her wedding vows in response to his voice. In her memory, she replayed moments that suddenly sizzled with significance. The preacher's roving eyes during church potlucks, his reluctance about training her for visitation, the women in Sarah's story about the angel. She imagined the preacher on that couch she'd just sat on, speaking softly of the peace that comes from church attendance. Gradually, he must have shifted from spiritual comforter to seducer, his hand on the woman's knee, his eyes on her breast, his unopened Bible on the coffee table. My mom's friend in the seat beside her sat silent and pale, staring at passing houses through the window. Hymns played on the car radio, unheard.
Okay, we're gonna take our 10 minutes.